Well, from the very first of his important film scores, the one he wrote in 1984 for Joel Cohen's Blood Simple, it was pretty obvious here was a composer with a unique and distinctive musical point of view, something that's only been confirmed with many scores he's written for the Cohen brothers since and for the scores he's written for other distinguished directors, including Todd Haynes. And for their third collaboration together, for the film Carol, the film composer Carter Burrell was recently honored with an Academy Award nomination. The picture is set in the 1950s, and you couldn't have possibly written this kind of music for a 50s picture, but it sounds very 50s, and not just because of the source material, you know, the source songs.
Right.
You know, it really has a feel of its time. How long did it take to get into that spirit?
While Todd was shooting, they were shooting in Cincinnati to look like New York City in the 50s, he and his music supervisor, Randy Poster, were compiling songs from the period, something Todd does. Todd really loves research. And they sent me CDs of hundreds of songs, mostly popular songs from that period. And I listened to them. And there wasn't any suggestion that the score was going to have to sound like, you know, music from that period. But it was just a way of getting into the zeitgeist, the feeling of it. And musically, it is an interesting period. I was not really familiar with it. If you'd said 1951, I wouldn't have known what to say. And I think that even having listened to all those songs, it's still hard to describe because you're post-World War II, you know, after big band, but rock and roll hasn't started yet, or, you know, even proto-rock and roll hasn't really started yet. It's very much a transitional period. There's a lot of novelty songs and jazz is mixing with pop. Anyway, I did listen to a lot of that just to get my mind into that space. But when it came time to write, I wasn't specifically referencing anything. I didn't want the instrumentation to sound, you know, wrong for the period. It's not like I was going to use synthesizers or something like that. But I also wasn't trying to write in the style of the period. I was really more going from just the look of the film. It's got this sort of gritty kind of look. He wasn't trying to romanticize New York. He's trying to make it, give it a little bit of that post-war feeling.
Sure, sure. And of course, in the midst of this is a very unusual romance, especially for the early 50s.
Right.
And not so much unusual in the sense that this wasn't going on, but not your typical romance, in other words.
Right, we haven't seen it in a feature film. And when Patricia Highsmith wrote this book, it was, you know, radical. She had to write it under a pseudonym. You know, her agent wouldn't let her release it under her own name. So, yeah, it's a story that at that time had not been told.
Yeah. Obviously, the Coen brothers are very fond of your work. You're up to, what, 17 pictures?
I've lost count. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, they're just certain directors, you know, and, you know, back to Hitchcock and Benny Herman and Raoul Walsh and Erich Wolfgang Korngold, you know, there are just certain combinations that click. And obviously, you have a similar relationship with Todd Haynes now.
Yeah, I guess we do. I guess Carol is our third collaboration. But, I enjoy working with, you know, certain directors, and especially when you do it repeatedly, you develop a shorthand. And also, more importantly, just a trust, a level of trust. So they'll let me try things out. For instance, with Todd, I can present him with very sketchy sketches of my ideas, something that I'd be afraid to do with a director I didn't know because, you know, although it used to be true that composers presented their ideas just on a piano, these days most directors are used to hearing elaborately orchestrated, synthesized renditions of the music. So I would be afraid to just play piano for a director today because I'd say, well, but you're going to put strings on this, right? But with Todd, I can do that. I can say, you know, I could send him something that's very rough, and he knows what I'm going to turn it into in the end because we've done this before. And that way we can have these early discussions. I do this with Joel and Ethan, too. I can throw out pretty rough ideas, and they know that in the end I'm going to make it sound like music, but I'm just getting the conversation going.
Sure.
Thank you.
sorts of stories about various directors being intrusive when it comes to music or laissez-faire when it comes to music. Alfred Newman's great dictum from the 1930s was, everybody in Hollywood knows two jobs, their job and music. So what kind of a guy is Todd Haynes as far as, I don't want to say being open to musical ideas or with very serious ideas of his own?
You know, I suspect that Todd has musical ideas of his own, but he's the kind of director who would not impose those on a composer. He certainly doesn't on me. So when we first watched this film through, he didn't say anything that I recall. And as I say, I'm pretty sure he had ideas, but he felt that the better route was to let me just go off and come up with some ideas of my own. And then once I presented those to Todd, then we began having a conversation. But I don't believe there was any direction really given. But it's the movie at the same time. It's not a complex story. It is a romance. There are layers to it, but it's not like I could possibly have misunderstood what the movie was really about. But as I say, Todd, he's a bright guy, and I'm sure he probably had some idea of what kind of score he wanted. But he also is the kind of director, and that's why people like working with him, who's really open to other ideas, other input. And so he very nicely kept his ideas to himself.
Yeah. What about the input of the two central performances, and especially the faces of these two extraordinary women?
Well, I think that's right. That's, people sometimes ask me in interviews, so where do you get your inspiration from? And a boring answer, but I get my inspiration from the film. You know, it's not any place else. And in this film, the eyes, really, of the two main characters were probably the most important source of information for me. They often can't or don't say exactly what they're thinking or feeling. It's either because, like in the case of the character Carol, she has these outward pressures on her. She lives a particular type of life, and she's also attempting to retain custody of her child. There are all these things that conspire to make it difficult for her to really do what she wants or even express what she wants. In the case of Therese, the younger woman, I'm not sure she even knows exactly what she wants or what her feelings are towards Carol, but she knows she's fascinated, and you see that in her eyes. So in spite of what they do or don't say, their eyes really tell you, or told me, everything that I needed to know.
Cate Blanchett, Oscar-winning actress. Rooney Mara, one of the most fascinating actresses of her time. I should say actor, to be more politically correct. Both received Oscar nominations for this film, and that certainly has got to help a lot when you have performances like this to bounce off.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. You know, they're both amazing, and Rooney is, I've seen so many films that she's in, but it's hard sometimes for me to list them because she just seems like a different person in all of them. She's an actor, but she does such an amazing job of bringing the characters to life that I actually think of them as those people rather than thinking of them as Rooney, and it's hard for me sometimes to connect them all. It's extraordinary.
Yeah. The girl with the dragon tattoo, for instance, the character she plays in that one, and the character she plays in Carol, the only thing they have in common is her. I mean, it's a simple-minded thing
really
to say.
It's really true,
But, she sort of channels another human being in front of your eyes and stuff. Did you spend much time on the set? I know film composers usually don't because you're the last guy on the job.
Yeah, no, I didn't. And they were shooting in Cincinnati in the winter.
So,
not exactly,
a big temptation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I do sometimes visit sets for fun. I visited the Hail Caesar set, but that's, they're shooting in Hollywood in the summer. There isn't usually any great need for me to be on the set. Sometimes I worked on a film called Rob Roy where they were shooting in Scotland, and I went over because I wanted to meet some local musicians and just begin to get a lay of the land in terms of the indigenous music there. But there, okay, maybe I had a good reason for going. But by and large, it's certainly not a necessary part of the job. But I enjoy it.
Yeah. Some big surprises working on this picture? Some tough things to get over? Some surprisingly easy things?
Yeah, I wish I could say it was the most challenging film ever. I have to say I loved working on it. And it's a there wasn't any there weren't any moments that are difficult. I mean, in film music, the thing that's always hard is just getting it done on time, I'll be frank. You know, we are not given very much time. In this case, I had 8 weeks to write it, which is relatively generous. So I feel I did get it all written pretty satisfactorily, and I had time to orchestrate it myself, which I like to do. But yeah, other than that, there was nothing that was especially hard. I really, and this kind of film is a great canvas for a composer. There's not a lot of dialogue, no explosions or gunfire, you know. It's a very quiet, restrained film in which music gets to really exist as a character and, you know, play a very important and dramatic role. It's very, very satisfying.
Well, exactly. And it also gets to do what great film music has always done, from the very beginning almost, to let you know what people are really feeling. It doesn't matter what they say. It's, right, you know, what's going on inside. And what better way than with music to explain all of that?
Right. Yeah.
Here is some more music from the Oscar-nominated score for Carol, music by Carter Burrell. Well, is it fair to say that the whole score is a species of chamber music?
Right, that's certainly true. I think our the largest ensemble involved was maybe 17 players, and more typically it was down around 7. And, you know, there's budgetary reasons for that, but it's also completely appropriate to this kind of intimate story.
Yeah. And the feel of the 50s, you know, the war is over, and what most people want is tranquility and calm and peace. And, you know, this is a generation that had a pretty tough 15, 20 years, you know, right, with the Depression and the Second World War. And it was all in retrospect, according to people who didn't like the 50s that much. I myself did a lot. They all insist it was all tamped down and repressed and so forth and so on. And there's an element of that in the score. I mean, this kind of barely repressible whatever it is that's actually moiling around there in the guts of the characters.
You know, in most all of the pieces, regardless of what's going on in terms of, you know, two people developing a romantic relationship, there is also this a bit of darkness, a bit of mystery, and a bit of tension. I mean, I tried to maintain that sense of suspense that you might expect from a Patricia Highsmith story. And Todd and I both, as we were working on it, developed this idea that the more we took things away from the score, the more things we didn't say, the more it did lend an air of suspense, kept you a little bit on the edge of your seat as to what's going to happen next. So that was the recurring motif of our meetings when we would discuss the music, is, well, if we pull this back, take this away, pare it down. And I gather he was doing that on the set too. He and the actor would say, do we really need to say this? And they would throw lines away because it was just better not to say it. And that's the nature of the film. It's interesting. There's so much restraint on all levels. But when I saw the final film all mixed at the New York Film Festival, I have to say I was blown away by how all these different aspects showing such great restraint, whether it's the set design or the writing, the acting, the editing, and the music, they all add up to something that's still very powerful.
Oh, is it ever?
Yeah.
Is it ever? Well, you have a few things in theaters right now. This happens sometimes, right?
Yeah, I had a couple of quiet years, and then this year, a bounty. Hail Caesar just opened, the Coen Brothers' newest film. The Finest Hours, a Disney, Coast Guard drama. And Anomalisa, a stop-motion animated film. It's rated R. Yeah, a few things out.
Yeah, writing for animation is not the easiest thing in the world to do. Typically, it's wall-to-wall music, number one.
That's true, although that's not true of this one. But you're right. I this is not in any sense a typical animated film. It's,
no.
It's an extraordinary film, but and truly not typical of anything.
Yeah. And what's on the horizon, if you're at liberty to discuss it?
Well, I'm working right now on a film called The Founder, which is about Ray Kroc, the, quote, founder, unquote, of McDonald's. And Michael Keaton plays Ray Kroc, and working on that right now. And then Todd Haynes has another film brewing that I believe we're going to get shot this year. And Martin McDonagh has I work with him on In Bruges and Seven Psychopaths. And he has a film that I think he's going to shoot in the spring, starring Fran McDormand. So these are things that, all this could change. That's the way film is. Any one of these things could not happen, or, might end up with John Williams scoring them. But
exactly.
But that's what the year looks like right now to me.
Yeah, yeah. And it seems like you're still having an enormous amount of fun doing it. I mean, it's incredibly hard work. And the most pressure, I think, of any single film element is, because if the picture doesn't work, since you're the last major element to enter the picture, if it doesn't work, it's your fault.
Well, it's no, that's true. I don't know if it's my fault, but you are right that because it is one of the last, creative elements, they do look to the music to fix any problems that are still there. If the chemistry between, the actors didn't work, or a story element isn't clear, or et cetera, et cetera. That's right. It's very true that the music is called upon to do that, and it's I do sort of in some way enjoy that challenge. And as long as I have films like the ones I've just been discussing, I am very happy to do it. These are all films that I would go out to see and that I think are interesting and tell stories that are unexpected. So for me, yes, that is fun.
No. Still sounds like it, I have to say. Carter Burrell, congratulations on the Oscar nomination.
Thank you
very much. High time.
It's about time.
Carter Burrell, thanks for stopping in tonight.
Thanks. It's my pleasure.